Vecchese and Sinigaglia at Bologna on September 28th, 1972.
You say we're talking about 1959 or 60?
Yes, I was contacted the first time for this purpose, I think the vacation around Natal, which is Christmas of 59. I was working about 4 years at Milano, in Milan, for industry and normal radio and television industry. And I was contacted about the end of 59, and I started work here in February 60.
I see. And you were hired specifically to work on the...
No, I worked, previously I worked in high frequency receivers for television. So I had some experience in low noise amplifiers.
I see.
Also in UHF frequency, but not especially in radio autonomy.
Right. But you were hired to work on the instrument specifically.
Here?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I was,
hired.
Hired, yeah. Specifically to design receivers for, in the first time, for a pilot antenna to test techniques, and there was already a very broad, not fixed, but in a great line design of the craft.
Right.
And so I designed in some months not very good, a bad receiver, but working receiver for 327 was deuterium frequency. At the time was chosen this frequency. After for administrative reason for allocation of frequency, we changed it to 408.
But 327 was protected because it was...
Yes, it was protected, but not very well. So we took this, is also protected not very well. But there was some hope to have more protection here than here. So this is a principal reason of the change. The first antenna was in the receiver, were working at this frequency. And the first receiver was, of course, a huge receiver at this time. But it not was not very good because tubes had jumps in amplification and so. And was after some months was designed a correlation receiver, autocorrelation receiver with a single antenna as a Bloom system. I was with Setti in Medon to talk with Bloom, and so we designed a correlation receiver which was built about a year after, tube. But we recognized that was necessary to use a transistor to have more stability. And so after the plan was made in a solid state, the final purpose, really only last month, some month ago, we changed discarded the last tube in the system. There was a power amplifier for local oscillator. But it is the last tube working in the system. Now it's all solid state. So there was a...
You mentioned SETI.
No. SETI was, this time, was in the group and stayed about 1 or 2 years.
It was there during the building.
Setti and also the city in different pairs worked with the little antenna. The little antenna was
Parabolic
cylinder, the parabolic cylinder for about 8 meters wide and no, 120.
Yes,
120. Yes. 120 meters long and 8 meters wide. And worked about 2 years to test techniques and to persone to
make some practice.
Practice. So was operated by Brazil and by setting different pairs. But after SETI changed in a theoretical astrophysics, and so was out of the group for many years because was in Holland in the United States, and so and only 2 years ago turned in the group as manager.
I see. Well, before we go on any further, perhaps I should ask Professor Bacisi about what you know of the cross design and so forth.
Now let us tell the history from the beginning. As far as I know, this project was initiated not on the wish of a scientist who had something to look for, which desire to make radio astronomy. It was initiated in a much colder way, because the head of the Institute of Physics those times, Professor Puppi, had at high governmental level, I don't know exactly at which level, had the insurance that a large scientific enterprise would be supported in connection with the Institute of Physics of Bologna. Then they thought which field could be this enterprise. And that happened, I think, at the beginning of 59. I'm pretty sure. The little east-west was operated in
June 59.
So it was at the beginning of 59.
Right.
They had this. And I don't really know how they decided that the field should be radio astronomy, but we decided this. And after this, we looked for people to take the thing in their hands. And we found Ceccarelli, who had was previously working on high energy physics with nuclear emulsions, and who had the desire to switch to another field, possibly because that field was becoming too well organized in a certain way. No more an activity
your
made by a few men.
I see.
We were introducing projector computers, large groups for reduction and for scanning.
Yeah.
And they liked another way of working. I think it can be tested. So he was in a certain way free. It was a scientist of a certain name. And so he was asked whether he would take in his hands the building of a radio astronomy group. But he had no idea of radio astronomy. I remember myself as a student, him scrambling through the subject index of the proceeding of the EAA transaction looking for what is a balloon, because we had only the knowledge of the rubber balloon to fly equipment, and not balloon. So just to say that he didn't know nothing about this matter was done. And from the very beginning they searched for I think Ceccarelli, I'm pretty sure that Ceccarelli and Mannino was then the head of the Institute of Astronomy, or was professor of astronomy, not the head of the Institute of those times, made a tour around Europe to get a broad idea of what it was going on. And this happened in May or April 59.
see, that was Ceccarelli and
Mannino, who was then none of them had a chair those times. Ceccarelli was teaching, I don't remember
physics,
what.
Physics
to the chemistry students, and Mannino was a charged professor of astronomy. And we made a tour of Europe. That I know because there were many photographs around. They took of all the equipment that was being built those time. And I think during this tour they decided that our instrument should have been a low frequency instrument, not a very high frequency. Something like we did after, or 180, or 408, or 327 megahertz
bands. In the meter or
in the meter wavelength bands. And the topic which was opened for study in the northern hemisphere those times was the topic of the Logan-Logest relations.
Oh, yes.
These times the situation was far from clear, because there was still the B2 around, not even the B3, the C2 survey.
2C.
The 2C survey around, not even the 3C survey.
Right.
And the disagreement in the counting between the 2C survey and the surveys by Mills were so huge,
yes,
that field seemed completely open. On the other end, high frequency stuff, which was even at those times directed to the study of the structure of CERS, I think the work of Lequeux and Nancy had already begun, and even the work of Moffat at Caltech had already begun to start. So I'm not really sure, but that of Lequeux said. So, in these fields, it seemed that the northern hemisphere was much better equipped. On the other end, there was this fight between the Australians and the Cambridge people, and they thought that with the amount of money we had, we could build an instrument which could in a certain way solve the dilemma, also because we were able to look to part, to a great part of the original Mills survey, and to great part of the C2 survey.
Being further south.
Being further south. And there were those times maps of showing the Mills sources and the C2 sources. And there was the agreement only of 8%.
Really?
Very, very bad.
I didn't realize it was that bad. What ended up being the trouble? Why did they disagree? Was it ever?
Because about two-thirds of the Lucy services are
side lobes.
Confusion.
No, side lobes.
Well, yeah. they had analyzed the records beyond the limit of confusion.
I see.
So, but this was not clear. Because
it was strong. Well, the whole theory of confusion and all was confused. I think you can look at the Paris Symposium proceedings and see that this great debate going on.
So then in the summer of 59, maybe I am too detailed, but it's easier for me to follow.
No, it's very good.
I know that Mannino and Ceccarelli made a tour around Italy to found a suitable location for a station. The first tour was done those times, and they had a car accident. I'm pretty sure that this was done those times. Then they decided that the technique to be employed should be that of the Cambridge interferometers, the interferometers that later made the 3C survey, namely frames with wires. That was the only way to get a sufficient collecting area.
Right.
At these frequencies. Those times there was even a problem with the noise of the amplifiers and so on, so the collecting area was always taken a bit large. Reduction facilities were very cruel.
Right.
So people feared very, very much from silos and wanted large collecting area, even to have rather large primary resolution from the interferometer element, because it was feared that this disagreement between Cambridge and Australians came from this kind of things. So there was this decision to employ the techniques which gives you the largest surface with the lowest price, the lowest cost. It seemed that the use of the technique of frames with stretched wires by the Cambridge people made was the best. So it was decided to build a first little instrument of that kind, just to gain, to get acquainted with problems, with the technical problems. In the meanwhile, there was discussion about what should have been the project for the great instrument we were to build, because we did already know that we could spend about 600 million lire of 150. So it's much larger than now.
150 lire per dollar then?
No, the lire in 150. Was much better. 160 lira was much better than the lira now.
Oh, yes, yes.
So it's about 1.4,
I
think, the devaluation, just to get an idea. So that the instrument should be quite large, it was already known. The technique, the technique for making the mirrors was chosen on the basis that it was the less costly per meter square.
Right.
Especially in consideration of the snow problem, because the technique used by Mills with a network of wires is not possible to use here by the snow can go.
And those times, in fact, I remember in France, his name, Raffineur, had built two parabolic cylinders on two distant mountains to make an interferometer, and we were made of a mesh, and every winter they collapsed.
I see.
And they had to raise them again. Well,
that was in the late 50s, I've never heard about that.
Yes, he had very good records of a few successes. They were spaced, I think, 30 kilometers or 60 kilometers, and there was a radiolink.
I don't know exactly. I heard of this experiment, but was not very was discontinued.
Yes, they practically made only the essays of this rather huge system. I don't remember exactly.
But it's one of the earliest long baseline interferometers.
Not long base, medium base, I think.
Well, some second,
40 kilometer base, sometimes.
That's completely sure. I mean, the wavelength was pretty long, and the two parabolic cylinders were on top of two different mountains.
Not connected by cables, I mean, that's
no. No, by radiolink.
That's the big difference. Was this published in Analdaste Physique?
Maybe.
I think was already discontinued when we started, because the SETI was
exactly.
And said that it was glass in grinding on the...
Someone got back here some photocopies of records of this instrument. I remember distinctly that the fringe was... And the beam had a large factor, and I don't know if there was a fringe rotator or not. Probably it worked fine for a few days, when the technique was not well enough. Was never used. Well, so the main technique to be employed in the mirror was defined. And the discussion was on the configuration of it, because those times there was many suggestion of strange configuration like that with which the three C have been done,
right.
Which I don't remember exactly, where four cylinders arranged in.
Right.
Well, in the May of 1960, We operated the small cylinder, which worked, and...
In 16.
In the May of 1960.
Right, the one you were talking about.
We operated with a cylinder of 8 by 120 meters, which worked, but was not very interesting scientifically. As far as I know, only two works have been done with that instrument. Sitti and Mannino studied the change of brightness of some spots on the sun during the rotation of the sun, the limb darkening in the radio region.
Right.
And myself and Vespignani, who was a student of mine those times, made a map of about half of the of an open sky, a continuous. Then not great effort was devoted to work with that instrument, because all the effort was devoted to study the great instrument which had to be built.
Right.
So it was abandoned after 2 years or so. How we came to decide to build the cross? Well, I remember that Nettison was here for probably in 1960, and we had many discussions, and the idea of the cross seemed us much more simple and clean than the stuff like the instrument with which the 3C survey had been made.
Right.
We got the idea that skilled people could use an instrument like that, which was being built for the 3C, but that unskilled and trained people should be more cautious, and it seemed that a kind of Mills cross could solve the problem. Those times there was no aperture synthesis and no polar synthesis around. The instrument with which the 4C had been done came late.
Right.
It came early enough that we could switch our mind, but even in this case we thought it would not be convenient to take the risk that if the instrument was operating fine, but with discontinuity, we should get nothing, because in the instrument which I've done before C survey, you have to get all the data for all the spacing and then add them. And we said, if the equipment have breakdowns, and we have no experience, if we are interfered, then we can get nothing, at least with a cross. After a checkup and everything going, even a few days, you get something.
Right.
So that was the philosophy, not to employ aperture synthesis, because we did not trust ourselves enough. We had no experience with a lot of equipment.
Didn't
want to
go too fast.
Yes. So we decided to build a cross. And I remember that in 1960 it was already decided to build the cross, because there was even the idea to make a cross with the little east-west arm we had already built. Then, how to make a cross? That was even another question. We had much fear of having many, many elements which should be put in phase, each by each. I mean, the dipoles of the north, south, up. So we looked whether it was possible to overcome this. We had many fear about this, because the original Mills cross, the dipoles were fitted by hand. Not only this, but in order that the beam tilts correctly against the cell, the mutual impedance of the dipoles, that the phase is correct, he had to use some clever techniques about the impedances to using the lines in the dipole, the coupling, which was very small and so on. And we felt we should not have been able to make such a sophisticated system.
I see now. What do you mean that the dipoles were fitted by hand in the middle of the
system? Oh, yes, there was a line with plugs, and its dipoles was fitted here to have a phase, and then shifted to another plug for the
If I remember well, there was a line, a transmission line, all along the north-south, and the dipoles were loosely coupled to this
capacitor.
And this capacitor could be inserted in many spaces, so that the phase of this dipole was changed by, say, eighths of lambda or so. But the difficult point was not the mechanical part. Well, partially was mechanical part, because the site of Mills is very arid, and we were in a very damp site. So this made the technical problem. But
also there is the mesh and the wires difference, because we could not make the north-south cylinder with a east-west polarization with wires.
That's right.
So it's difficult to make a continuous cylinder.
Well, yes, that was another point. And then I can say this because I worked on the lines and on the antenna with Ceccarelli. He was in charge of the what came after the connector. We were in charge of what came before the connector, in a certain way.
But there was, of course, overlap, because he worked also on slightly on electronics. I had some discussions with Ceccarelli for antenna, so there was not very clear.
But, I remember that we did not understand very clearly how this feed system of the north-south of the Mills cross worked. We did understand the principle, of course, but it was very easy. But the subtlety of the fact that the coupling was little, so that the phase shifted by the by a given amount, because if it is large, the mutual impedances make troubles. You must remember that in the north-south, the dipoles are parallel, so the mutual impedance is very, very large. I must say, we failed not to have understood completely, and to come in some problems. Like Mills itself, it took him and his group a large amount of effort to make all this work. So we decided it was better to have a limited amount of north-south elements, which would have practically no mutual impedance one on the other, so that when they were tilted mechanically and electrically, there should be no problem. Then I don't remember exactly, but the solution was very easy. We wanted a beam, but the structure of the north-south should have been a multiple interferometer. Then those times was already around the literature the Covington idea of putting a large mirror on an interferometer. I'm pretty sure it was already there. We took the idea from I think it was a Canadian group said was Covington, to make this this time.
I don't know if it was the first.
At least
but,
it was
one of the first in the, this
to have used this well at least.
Can I'll have to check that out, yeah.
And we used this idea in order to make an instrument which would give a beam on the sky and not fringes of an interferometer, but should have a north-south which is unfilled. The unfilling of a north-south is compensated by the fact that East West is quite broad in North Southern
Bridge. Right.
And that was our decision. About those times, many of us have gone to Holland those times. Sitti was there for he had a scholarship, but he was doing theoretical work.
He was in Holland in
I think even Ceccarelli and
yeah.
Been in Holland. So I don't remember exactly at which time it came out the project by Christensen for the Benelux Cross.
I think it was in 61, because yes. I was there in 60, and there was Seeger.
Yes,
was
yes.
There.
Charles
Seeger. And in 61...
Seeger was here in 1960.
Was
yes.
Also here, and I met him also in Holland. And after some months came in Europe Christensen, also was here for the theological electricity. For the eclipse, solar total eclipse was visible here in Bologna. And he was here and discussed with...
So, about the same time that it was known in Holland, because I remember that Christensen had his handwritten project of the Benelux Cross, not even typewritten, we discussed it on his handwritten sheet. We got the knowledge of his solution for a cross, which corresponded to our need of having only a few elements in north-south which should be moved and phased, because even the project of the Benelux Cross have a north-south and a multiple interferometer.
Mm.
But the idea of Christensen was different in a point, that it does not use the Covington idea of a large mirror. All the elements of east-west and north-south are equal, should have been equal. And there was a game done with a phase in order to suppress the grating lobes. Namely, the instruments were arranged in such a way that at this first grating lobe, the east-west and north-south gave signals in quadrature, 90 degree,
right.
One electrical degree, one from the other, and the correlation system should suppress these signals.
Right.
And then the others are already suppressed by the mirrors. It's the first grating lobe. It's intriguing with this system. Well, we did not switch to this idea for two reasons. One is that each element of the north-south should be as should have the same geometry than the east-west. They shall have the same height for the mechanical turning point and the very same electrical design. So the geometry should be the very same of east-west and north-south elements.
Of the Benelux Cross.
Of the Benelux Cross. Furthermore, the east-west should be due.
Right.
Now, and third, this trick of the 90 degrees seemed to us a bit critical. So we decided to go on with the idea of having a rather wide east-west, which we thought could be even useful by itself. Then the east-west we propose at Benelux Cross is an interferometer, so it's less useful by itself. And a multiple interferometer in north-south. Then there was a lot of work because all the details had to be defined, tried, and then mass-produced. All the details of the lines, all the details of the receiver. And the receiver is cumbersome things with many preamplifiers and many output channels. Those times, I think the only instrument which had preamplifiers going together, added in phase, was the Nancy Sun interferometer. And maybe no instrument had an array of beams as an output.
in the, this time, Bloom was constructing.
Yes. Yes.
Bloom was constructing a thing that was named the Bloomathon by the it was about a multi-beam system, but it was not working. It was in construction in the laboratory in Meudon.
So,
would you say that was the most unique thing about your instrument at that time, the multi-beam aspect?
No, what? I think our instrument was the first to have a separate frequency converter, because the Bloom instrument had prime amplifiers, high frequency amplifiers at 5.8 megahertz, I think.
178.
Yeah, the television band not occupied at the time. And had a preamplifier with underground cables to the center station. We decided to make a converter in the antenna to have a low frequency, intermediate frequency cables and a distribution of local oscillator equiphase on the receivers. I think was the first to have this configuration in operation.
Then,
of course, after many, but
then we make strive against time to get this east-west arm, or at least half of it, because we got only half of it working, because the money was running away, and it was necessary to have something finished. With the idea that when it was finished and shown to work, we should be able to ask a bit more money.
Right. Mm.
So, I think without great delays, in 1964, there was the delay of 1 year, I think, because of administrative difficulties also those times. But it
especially for the ground, because the ground was not possible to
To buy the
land.
The land.
And so there was about a year of discussion from the administration and the land board to make the
affitto for the rent.
So we stopped the works on the ground for an year, continued in the laboratory, but it was not possible to put down a foundation of
but
the...
But nevertheless, I think that with no experience we had, we pushed pretty hard, and in 64, East-West was finished.
In,
and started to operate
September,
in October 64. During this time, was with us and worked hardly to this. Both Harris,
Dan Harris,
and also Louis
Wolders
from Holland.
And where is there a good description of this instrument published?
In Novocimento. We can give
there are three papers.
Yes, I'd like to have a copy of that.
I don't know if I can.
So, this test was finished.